had a lot of emotions that were inside of me that I kept contained so that I could allow the performers to release theirs, you know, just be a kind of conduit and just help them to release those emotions. And so it was really about just striking a balance of like, yes, I am feeling deeply for the struggle of each character, giving each actor really clear instruction, direction, but also not wanting to overwhelm the set with my own emotion.
Welcome back to The Slow Dive. I'm your host, Farida, joined by my super producer, Drew. And today we're entering a conversation shaped by intention, artistry, and truth-telling. I'm joined by the Water Angel film team, two powerful storytellers whose work pushes our culture forward and expands the narratives we hold about ourselves and each other. First, we have Nigella Moman, the visionary writer, director, and poet behind Water Angel. Nigella's filmmaking is rooted in the textures of real life, poetry, music, memory, and she brings her whole creative lineage to the screen. Her debut feature, Gin, premiered at South by Southwest, where she won the Jury Recognition Award for screenwriting, and it later became a New York Times critics pick before its release by MGM. She's a member of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, a Cal Arts dual degree graduate. And her directing credits span Queen Sugar, Insecure, Wu-Tang, and American Saga, Swagger, All Rise, and more. Her Netflix short, Black Prom, and her upcoming feature, Noor, continue to showcase her deep lyrical voice as a filmmaker. This year, her short film, Water Angel, produced by the MTV Staying Alive Foundation, was released on YouTube and Paramount Plus, adding another resonant chapter to her body of work. We're also joined by Megan Latrice Fillmore, an activist storyteller and the founder of Hudson Fillmore, a production company committed to centering womenist, queer, BIPOC, all abilities, and all sizes narrative. Megan recently served as a line producer and unit production manager on Water Angel, bringing 20 years of production mastery across film, television, and digital media. A proud member of the Directors Guild of America, she has shaped productions at Paramount, the NFL, and YouTube Originals, overseeing budgets from $25,000 to $20 million. Her work spans everything from Naked and Afraid to the Emmy-winning Freedom Writers by Stanley Nelson. Hudson Fillmore's films have screened across major festivals from Outfest Fusion and Frameline to Bentonville and Imagine This, and Megan's own directorial work has earned her multiple awards. Beyond her craft, she pours into the community as a mentor, a volunteer, and a devoted TT to her nephew, Trey. I am excited to speak with this wonderful creative duo today. Welcome, Nigella, and welcome, Megan. How are you guys?
Good.
I always keep saying I'm exhausted, but I'm inspired.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Exhausted and expired. That's producer thinking, right? We're always multitasking. Can't do one. Gotta hold two spaces. I love that. All right, guys. Well, we're going to go right into our first segment, which I like to call the icebreaker. So I'm just going to ask one question and we'll just, what inspired you into filmmaking, or when did you realize that film was the medium where you felt your voice would feel most at home?
I think for me, I grew up born and raised in the Bay Area, and I was always surrounded by different art forms. Like my first love was actually singing, which is, I still really love to do, want to be a singer. And I love dancing. I did dance classes throughout, you know, my youth and teen and college years. I loved watching movies, of course. My father took me to the movies a lot in Oakland at a theater called Grand Lake Theater. That's where I saw a film called Malcolm X, directed by Spike Lee. Mm-hmm. And being Muslim, growing up as an African-American Muslim, it had a very big impact on me as a child. Just seeing how the audience responded to the film, they were crying and shouting and just so emotional. And I think I knew at that point, even if I didn't know I was going to be a filmmaker, I was like, I want to have that impact on people that this film and that Denzel and Spike Lee are having on this audience. So I continued to just read, avid reader, loved reading like Black fiction. And it wasn't until I was in college at UC Berkeley when I started to merge my love for photography, for poetry, for creative writing into filmmaking. And I wanted all of those art forms to have like a bigger impact than they did on their own. And I picked up a camera and I just started shooting like my first film in the Bay Area. At that time, narrative filmmaking wasn't really something that was popular in the Bay at that time. So I really kind of dreamed up a life. I mean, I was definitely inspired by, you know, Spike Lee and Julie Dash and filmmakers that, you know, I was coming to know. But it really was in college that I really said I'm going to be a writer director and started to own that and take agency in that and build a community around me that supported me. And, you know, from there it was going, you know, to film school, perfecting my craft. But I'm really an interdisciplinary artist involved in different mediums, and all of those really serve the filmmaking that I do.
I've seen Jen. It's a beautiful film as well. I saw it at a Muslim MPAC event in like 2019.
Oh, cool.
A while, yeah. So I think you were on the panel as well. And yeah, I mean, beautiful film. And I like that you took your experiences. And it's always good to get inside of the mind of a director and a producer. What about you, Megan? What drew you into filmmaking where you felt like this was a medium where you felt most at home with, or visual storytelling?
Well, real quick, what Nigella said, my dad took me to school days because he wanted me to go to a Black college. So that was my movie with my dad, where I first saw Spike Lee. And also with my father. My father had two TVs side by side. One would have sports, one would have like HBO, because HBO was like new when I was little. And we watched Steel Magnolias once. And Sally Field, when she cries in the cemetery, when she's mourning her daughter, I told my dad, I said, I want to be able to do that. So the credits roll, you see the unit production manager. And I said, I'm going to do that. Had no idea what it is, but it was like, I want to help that happen. So I thought for a while I was going to be a book editor because I thought books are how, you know, you make movies. I had really no idea. And then I realized I love theater and there's like behind the scenes and how that works. So that was like my road in. But I always, in high school, I did arty stuff. People would always be like, oh, you're an artist. You love film. I left from books to go to film, television, theater. And I was a theater major.
Major, love that. You know, that makes so much sense too, because, you know, like producers, unit production managers, line producers, they're like the nucleus of a production. So to take the creative vision of the director and the writer and then to break it down and bring it to life, I really see that as like the synergy between producers and directors, they're both important. So the theater part, I'm sure, like, did that like inform you to be like in the moment producer, the contingency, the pivots? And I mean,
Because in theater, like Susan Lloyd Parks went to my college. So she would come and she would be very much like a professional. She would leave after the first day. So the stage manager then has to give the notes because the director's no longer there for the rest of the run. Other directors that I got to work with, and I was able to work with a lot of Black women directors too, they empowered me to assist them and be a part of the project as a stage manager. So yeah, that's how I kind of got my, a lot of my skill set in this business, to work, hear the creative and really take notes, you know, take all their blocking down, know how they want their lighting done, and then try to interpret it even when they're gone. And Susan Lloyd Parks, that was a lot for me. It was a lot for me to do that. But after I did it, every year I would come back, she would request me. So, you know, she would be like, is Megan still here? So yeah. And so yeah, that's what I did.
Lovely. No. And I mean, Nigella, you can speak to this. Like, how does your relationship with your producers and production work and like giving you the space to create more or just bringing your imagination to life? How important do you think that synergy is to someone who might be a new filmmaker or producer who's listening to this? What do you think is one of the key to your fruitful collaborations with all your projects?
I think it's really important that your producer really understands and appreciates the story that you're trying to tell, because that will be the key to you executing that story to its fullest, scale. For me in the past, the producer that I worked with on my feature film, Jen, Avril Speak, she's amazing, but she was one of the first people that I sent the script of Jen to, and she saw herself in that story. Like, it spoke to her. She truly got the vision. And so there was never any confusion around what I was trying to do artistically. She was a creative producer and she was also a director herself in the past. So she really got the vision and the scope and the tone and the kind of different layers and threads that I was trying to kind of achieve there. And she was able to bring her expertise in production to, raising the budget and to helping to finance it. So I really think it's about finding people who see you and respect you and want to tell that story. And when something is important to you, they want to make sure that happens. You know, even with Water Angel, there was a lot that I wanted to do. It was such a long story with that film, but there was a lot that I wanted to do. And I felt safe letting, Megan know, hey, this is something that is important to me. Let's fight for this, right? And have a producer, especially when you're working with other companies and other people who says, hey, this is important to my director. Let's fight for this. Like, I'm going to really try to get this, even if we don't get it in the long run, because it's out of our control. Just to have someone who says, I see you and hey, I know what you're trying to do. Let's try to figure it out instead of just saying, no, we're not going to do that. I don't think that's a fruitful partnership for someone to really understand your vision. And then without even investigating if it's possible to tell you, no, we can't do that. So I always look for people who see my vision, want to make it happen, go and, look at our resources and try to make it happen. I think that's very important.
I love that. No, those are incredible takeaways. What about you, Megan? Like, what advice would you have to emerging producers and like collaborating with visionary directors and creatives in film and other medias? What do you think is like some tips that you can give how to be a better producer when you're working with directors?
Well, I think one, when you have someone like Nigella, Nigella has a very serious, she has a very differential, like her look looks different than other people immediately. The tone, and since she writes and directs, that also was a bonus. Because I think with Water Angel, just using this example, if it would have been someone else's script, that Nigella and I would have had to execute with all the other difficulties that we had making it, that might have been more of a challenge. But knowing that Nigella has poetry, and not just in text or spoken word, but she has poetry in the way the camera moves, right? So that was something that I really had to wrap my head around. And I watched any short I could get from her even before I interviewed with her, just because I was like, can I make this with these parameters? And I knew I could, because I was like, there's so many things I know she could. If we had to cut something, there was a way. And what I really enjoyed, or what I really, really like, and I look forward to with directors, is if they are able to also tell their story in a shorter amount of time if we have to cut. So that is something for emerging producers, because there are some directors that are so fixated on what they want, they might miss their blessing of having to compress or delete something because of time, money, space, actor availability. Just there's so many things, and the writer director who can be able to talk and be nimble is just, it's so important to look for.
Both Nigella and Megan, as part of the Water Angel team, director and producers, when you look at the maternal health crisis in this country, especially the disproportionate harm to Black mothers, what stood out to you most as you began shaping the story?
I think what stood out to me is something that I've always known, just because I've studied, you know, kind of the historical foundations of medical racism before I took on this short film, specifically looking at, you know, slavery and looking at, you know, our ancestors and how a lot of Black women during that time were not seen as human beings. You know, they were purely seen as, you know, just breeders, you know, to continue the system of slavery. And so when they had, you know, health issues or medical concerns, they weren't heard, they weren't seen. There was a gynecologist, a white man named J. Marion Sims, who operated on a group of enslaved women without anesthesia. And this was something that was accepted at that time. You know, this idea that as Black people, as Black women, we don't feel pain, that our pain is not deserving of attention. And so I had that foundation when I came into making this film. And as I spoke with gynecologists, spoke with doulas, I'm also a Black woman. I have a lot of friends who have, you know, given birth, who've had these type of experiences. It just reinforced that stigma and that kind of attitude that has been, you know, happening since, you know, we've been brought to this country. So it wasn't like it stood out. It was just like, wow, like we're still in this place where when we're crying out for help, people are not listening, you know? And that was a key theme of the film. There was just a video that came out recently of a Black woman who's in so much pain. She's about to give birth. She's just crying out, and this white nurse sitting next to her is just on the computer typing away. And it's just like, what? And this is why we made this film. This is why we made this film, because the internal life of these Black birthing people is completely left out. You know, we don't understand in the mind and the emotions really what's going on unless we really privilege that voice. And mm-hmm. that was what we wanted to do with Water Angel, really privilege the inner life, the voice, the emotions, the love, the complexity of ourselves, of Black women, Black birthing people who are not listened to, who are not seen, who are just pushed aside. So that was something that stood out to me, and I wanted to honor that.
I think what you just said, that video about the Black women in the nurse, that is just recent, like literally last month, and in Texas. And there's actually a couple of incidents in the last month that's happened where it's just like, wow, you know, it's mind-blowing to me, and of course, I'm not a Black woman, but I'm a brown woman, to just see that in 2025, you can't feel safe to go to the doctors and be at the edge of birth and pain and like be totally dismissed and glossed over. And like, what do you think? And this is a question for both Megan and Nigella, since you worked on this impactful film, like, what do you hope that the audience who's not Black take away from this film? Like, who don't have those lived-in experiences or no friends or family who've been hurt by the racism or the disparity, what do you hope that the takeaway from the film?
I would hope that beyond just, you know, understanding that this is a very serious, serious matter, you know, the Black maternal health crisis, that we really pay attention to how we treat Black women across the board, and in terms of just listening. You know, I just think that in a lot of areas of society, not just in the medical, you know, sphere, people aren't listened to. Their humanity is not honored. And as a Black woman, I've experienced this, you know, in this industry, in relationships, just in so many areas of my life. And I think that I would really love for the humanity of Black women to be honored across the board. And I know that that might seem, you know, like a dream, but it's something that I, in all of my work, I want that to be honored. And that's what I want the audience to take away from this.
What about you, Megan?
It's so much. I think for me, one of the main reasons why I did the movie is I lost my ability to have children because of dismissal. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't with child when I lost the ability to, but it was all the lead up, because I'm also a large bodied Black woman, right? Mm-hmm. So that also is another layer in society that has so much discrimination, especially with others, you know, with other people looking at me. And so I made it in my mind that people could get empowered. I didn't even think about how other people would view it, Farida. Mm-hmm. I wanted young women, because like young women are learning how to self-abort because mm-hmm. of the policies going on. I went to a couple classes with Bell, Black Women in Wellness, that were mm-hmm. teaching the young women, because I just wanted to know what it's like to not have as many rights, right? Because I'm, you know, Nigel and I and you, Farida, are the freest women who've ever lived, right, in the United States. And so the younger ones, early 20s, especially if they're in a state that's risky, like I'm in Ohio, they passed some legislation, so Ohio is not completely, you know, restricted anymore. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's something I think about. But I really wanted Black and poor women to be able to realize they can empower themselves to have a healthy pregnancy despite what goes on. I live in Inglewood, and the Sentinella Hospital that's there, in 2023, the maternal health ward shut down because a woman died. Wow. By neglect from the hospital, a Black woman. So I wanted, you know, I mean, it's like right by my house. You know, I can walk to the hospital and I'm like, there's no maternal ward there just because of neglect, you know.
Wow, that's incredible. There's no maternal ward in the hospital because of, so where do moms go if that's like the closest hospital? I mean, what is that? Does that affect the availability or provider availability to the communities?
It does. And they don't know how they're going. They don't know what the plan is to fix it. Like, that part of the hospital is shut down, which I just think is very interesting. They built it for the 1984 Olympics. I'm imagining when the Olympics come again, they'll figure out what to do. But MLK also shut down in the area. So people have to go further out to get their health care. And it really hurts brown and Black women, particularly in LA with no cars. It really affects them. But the fact that the woman was dismissed and she lost her life, I can't remember if the child was able to be here or not. I'm sad that I can't remember that right at this moment, but it really broke my heart. After we did this project, I just start looking for stories. And I found that story and it really broke my heart because I was like, this is my neighborhood. This is, you know, this is my city. And they don't have that, you know, access. So, yeah.
When I was interviewing one of the gynecologists who was consulting, obstetrician who was consulting on this film, we were talking about basically the protocol that happens in certain states, you know, that have, you know, abortion restrictions. And in the case that a birthing person is, you know, about to die, like, on, you know, fighting for their life. And if there's still, you know, a heartbeat of the fetus, of the baby, basically it is about that, you know, it's not about saving the person's life. And there's a scene in the film where the nurse is like, you know, they're like, call the lawyers. And that's a real thing. I think that for me was one of the most crazy things I've ever heard, that you have someone who is clinging to life. And because of those restrictions and those laws, that we're going to go and call the lawyers and potentially this person might expire. This person might lose their life. And that was one of the most heartbreaking, I think, things that I really had to internalize for this story.
Yeah. One more question for you, Nigella. Like, how did you prepare emotionally with knowing, with the subject matter, with your directing, your talent, your actors? Like, how was that process like on this subject for you? And them as well, Johnny and Jamal's character.
Yeah, emotionally, this was a challenging project emotionally for me. Because I'm not a mother. I haven't had a child, but I really wanted to have a child with someone, and it didn't work out. And I was really, really going through a lot of intense emotions around just wanting that during the production. it was just so intense. And the character of, you know, the character of Jamal was so interesting to me because I was like, wow, that's love for someone to be beside you on your, you know, in your hospital bed and really just advocate for you. Like, that's what I wanted, you know? So there was a lot that I was kind of like struggling with, but I really, really just wanted to be a safe space for my performers. I really wanted them to be able to embody these roles and go to sometimes difficult places. And I would always be there for them and be able to comfort them. And when we call cut, I'm right there for them. You know, I know it can be really hard, especially in the scene where Johnny wakes up. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most difficult scenes because the just the thought of carrying, you know, this life and then like it's gone, like it's just heartbreaking. So I wanted to definitely be that safe space. I'm a very emotional person. I had a lot of emotions that were inside of me that I kept contained, you know, so that I could allow the performers to release theirs, you know, and just be a kind of conduit and just help them to release those emotions. And so it was really about just striking a balance of like, yes, I am feeling deeply for the struggle of each character, giving each actor, you know, really clear instruction, direction, but also not wanting to overwhelm the set with my own emotional kind of my own emotion. So it was really just like a push and pull, but it was hard. Like when I watch the film, I cry. Sometimes I can't watch the film because it carries a lot in the process of trying to make the film and working with all these companies. It was difficult. So I have to I can't just cry, I have to be there for everyone. And that's what I try to do, just be just a maternal figure and just be there for everyone on the set and just, direct, give my actors what they need to perform.
Thank you for sharing that process, because I think it's really important for people to realize, especially with such heavy topics and important topics such as grief, maternal health disparities, death, like it does carry a substantial emotional weight on the performers and the directors and even the crew and the team, right? So like, did you guys have any trauma informed, like prepping the cast and crew for the subject matter? Like, was there, Megan, did you guys have any talks about the story before going into production? Getting people mentally prepared for what it was, or that was just kind of already implied in during development meetings per se. Just curious to know that.
Well, at MTV Staying Alive had a wellness coach number to reach out to, and after our table read, which was on Zoom, we did have one actress that hit me up again for that number, because I gave it to them, I think, when I sent off their hiring documents again, just so they know. But I don't know if Nigella had any special thing, but I know I gave that off when they were hired.
No, that's great. I love asking, because I think one of the wonderful things about women producers and filmmakers, like, we're so I've noticed this in women-led teams, such as yourself, we really cover everything. we really want to take care. And the word you use, Nigel, you were mothering your crew. Yes, that's true. Because it's very symbiotic, right? Like, I mean, it is a family for a time being. So I love that. That's why I was asking for anyone else who also has that approach to filmmaking. And producing such heavy topics that are not always pleasant, but very important, they need to be handled with care.
Yeah. So. And just to say, because this is, I have done very, like this last, I directed an episode of TV that recently came out for a show, and it had very heavy subject matter. And I've had a lot of heavy subject matter in my career to direct. I find that being warm and then being a good person and like checking in with actors and just really kind of caring about people has helped me a lot in my directing and working with actors and working with performers. So I really try to just find an emotional connection to them and honor that. And I don't, like, I'm not an a-hole. I'm just not into that. I find that I get better performances when I'm able to connect deeply with the performers in that way.
Well, this is a question for both of you ladies. And I will start with you, Megan. How has this film been received with your film community, friends and family who've seen it, or overall since it's been put out by MTV Alive Foundation? And I know the film is also online and you guys plan to do a lot with it going forward. But so far, what has the responses been on this film and the subject and how people feel? Just curious to know that.
Well, everyone that I know who's seen it loves it. I do know a lot of these spaces where, us trying to get screenings or funding for festivals, what I've been heard, what keeps telling me is they're looking for stuff that's immediate. And I'm just like, you want to give money to things that are immediate. And I find it really interesting that babies, a healthy birth is not immediate, right? Because it's a looming problem that is happening. Mm-hmm. So when people tell me that, I'm like, well, what is immediate? Like, I'm, you know what I'm saying?
What's urgent?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's been a very interesting process. And everyone loves it. The comments online, people, the commentators that'll have like the video playing, the trailer in the background talking about the movie. I think the impact to the young women, which the fund that funded the movie wanted, I think Nigella hit it out the box. You know, she hit it out the box with getting them to feel empowered, to feel seen and heard. And what that selfishly has done for me, there are certain projects that heal a part of me, right? Mm-hmm. This is definitely one of them. It healed a part mm-hmm. of me where I can really, you know, be a true auntie, right? I am in love for the first time ever, and we've made it past the year, which is crazy.
Wow.
I love it.
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm so happy.
And so he has grandchildren and his oldest daughter, me getting to be myself with her, even though there's some parts of me that's like, I'll never be able to give him a child, but I still am able to be in his children's life, you know?
Wow.
And Water Angel really helped me do that, because I was the best professional I've ever been on that movie, right? So it was like, I got to be the best that I could. Like, I gave my best to Nigella, and we both were up against a hill. Right. Like just a crazy hill, because it happened during the LA fires. Like we shot.
Wow.
Following the LA fire. So it just wasn't the subject matter, the hurdles with explaining to people that don't live our lives, that mm-hmm. want to do good. Hey, we actually have to do this to, you know, it was a whole bunch of hurdles, but I'm healed, you know, a piece of me healed, and I'm stronger that I did it. And so I really think the impact of, you know, seeing people like it, and I want more audiences to see it, because mm-hmm. I really think that they'll all grow from it too, particularly Black women. I'm really hoping that they can, you know, heal as well. So.
Yeah. I was going to say, first of all, like, why Water Angel, a lot aside from the beautiful film production value, it's a beautiful film. So hats off to Nigella, Megan, and the whole cast and crew. It's a beautiful performance. And I see the through line of like your poetic style and your vision as a director. But what struck me is that film like Water Angels, and this is very unique to the Black maternal health experience, it shows a way, I think, what's missing in films, which I do think is very relevant and timely, is very urgent. Birth, childcare, maternal health care is a very timely and urgent topic. So I don't know who would pass on that. That's ridiculous to me. But I would say, and I would ask them, why would you pass on that? Why is this not urgent enough to, like, so that's a question for those people. Like, why don't you think this is urgent enough, right? Because that's something to go into another topic. But I would say what I think is missing from a lot of films, but this one hit it off, is the empathy part. I think for people who are outside the lived-in experience, who don't know that, I think what I see a successful film that hits a social impact or social issue is that for a moment, you're able to empathize or at least understand far better than you did before. And I think that's why visual storytelling and films with heavy subject matter, with the call to action, are so important, because there is such a thing as a documentary fatigue. People sometimes love documentaries because it's real, it's truthful, it's honest, but it's also heavy. So we do need ways where narrative can still deliver that empathy, that call to action, still amplify important issues, but it's also entertaining. And you can also bring in your own experience, like what you just said, Megan. Like, I think that's something else. As an audience member watching this film, I think it's a successful film when you see parts of yourself in that film, or you can relate to it, or you can heal from it, or you can find closure or resolution, or come into a film and walk away learning something you'd never learned, you didn't know before. You're like, you had no idea 3 to 4 times more likely women, Black women, suffer medical disparity at the hands of hospitals and clinicians and doctors and providers. And to me, that is an alarming rate. Why 3 to 4 times more than anybody else? You know, and it shouldn't be like that, especially in the most vulnerable time in a woman's life, when she's giving life, she's giving birth. That should not happen. So I would say that person who just said that this is not an urgent film, this is a very urgent film. This is a very timely issue. And I think Water Angel, in another film that I worked on, she has done also a maternal health film. These films are very few. We need more. We need more stories in the narrative realm that open it to everybody about these things. So I believe that's where narrative can really thrive and shine. And I think that's what Water Angel has done so beautifully, is that I could relate to it. I'm not a Black woman, but I am also, I felt the injustice. I feel the pain and as an audience member, but at the same time, it's a beautiful film. So just wanted to say, like, I really do hope you guys get it into hospitals, into universities, and have like a national screening. A, because it's a beautiful film. B, because I think this is the best way to reach audiences through narrative. Younger women who might be going into a motherhood later in life, for them to be aware. And also, I think for advocacy, right? So how can we be allies to our Black women community as well, and even doctors and practitioners? Like, what can we do to lessen these numbers, these ratios where women are being completely dismissed and neglected? And why is that happening? So, I mean, what is the long-term vision, Megan and Nigella, for this film that you guys hope to do? I guess that after my long rant, because I was so moved. After I was so moved, I have to bring it back to you guys. What do you hope the long-term vision is the next few years with this film? What do you hope to do with it?
You know, it's interesting just because, you know, I'm the writer-director, but this film is owned by MTV Staying Alive Foundation and Bloom Films and the other companies. So I, as the creator, would love for this film to have a very, very long life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for this film to be screened theatrically. So the film right now is primarily, it's only available on YouTube and Paramount Plus, which is awesome. You know, it's immediate. You can just watch it on your computer. You can watch it on your phone. And I think that's awesome. But I think there's a power in this film that needs to be seen on a big screen. It is a visually impressive film. Our cinematographer, Maricela, did an amazing job. The performances, the poetry, the sound design. And I think having screenings with communities where they're together and can, you know, experience it emotionally and then have a discussion afterward together is very important for this film. So I would love for this film to go to different cities, you know, Black maternal health, you know, conferences, be screened for those audiences in a theatrical setting, have discussions with medical professionals, doulas, learn more about, you know, what it takes to be a doula, how that can benefit, you know, your birthing experience. I really feel like that's the missing part of the film right now, is that we have not been able to have those screening events and have those kind of community discussions. I think that's what I hope for the film. And I think people can take so much from those type of community discussions and screenings. I know I do. And I'm hoping that we get that organizations partner with us, that the companies who made the film do, you know, put some effort into this, because I think when you make a film, it's about community. Like I talked about seeing Malcolm X when I was little, that was a community experience that I'll never forget. And I think that's what films do. They bring us together in the theater
a lot of times to have a type of communal experience of emotion.
What about you, Megan?
I definitely want the same. And what I would like also, because this is one thing I truly believe, when the Black woman is treated fairly, and that's encompassing everything that means woman, that's our trans sisters, when we talk about birthing people, trans men that's had it, when we get parity in anything, everybody wins. And so I also feel other groups, because in Hollywood, just in Hollywood in general, the Black community has been able to make inroads that make other groups be able to as well. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, there's a growing lack of GYNs that are coming up in medical school. There's maternal health deserts. This big, beautiful bill is about to make it a hot mess. This movie can be used to teach communities that are not just Black, white women who live in a lot of these rural places where there are no doctors, teach them how to become their own sort of support system so that they can deliver babies, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful for that. I'm also hopeful for the Native communities. There are a lot that I've seen on the news that are struggling as well to just be able to do the most natural thing in the world, create life, have a baby, and support, like a system to support that around mm-hmm. it, especially with these rollbacks that are coming across the board. So I definitely would want those screenings, film festivals, people to come on so that Nigella and maybe even Rachel and one of our consultants can go to these places, talk about the research they did and really speak to young women and also women my age. There might even be women in their late 40s that still can give birth that may be in a state where it's too risky and they don't want to deal with a complication, and just so they can feel seen and heard and do the most natural thing, you know?
I love that. No, I love that. And I think for me, this film is such an impactful educational film as well. And attached to that, like, yeah, definitely, like, you know, I really hope whoever hears this today connects with you and Nigella and like brings it to their communities. Because I think discussions that happen after a screening in real time can never compete with watching a film on your laptop, on your home. It's not the same. It's not the same, because then you are able to connect with everyone else's experience. And also, filmmaking is community. We're a community of filmmakers. It takes a whole bunch of us to make a film, to see a film, to appreciate it. So why not have that whole added bonus? Well, we are going to link all the information to the film, to our guide, so people can watch Water Angel as well on their own. And then we'll keep you, everybody, updated on any future screenings. I know we're almost out of time, and this has been such a great conversation. I will ask where we are in the future of film and storytelling, given where we are with AI and disruption and the contraction and everything. Like, we're seeing a lot of hubs move out of LA. Like, what is keeping you hopeful? And what do you think is the evolution of our narrative spaces, our narrative storytelling? And what guidance, and this is a question for both, would you have to creatives entering into this field at this moment in 2025 if they want to be film producers or filmmakers?
Things have changed so drastically. I even think about living here in Los Angeles from when I came here for film school in 2010 till now. It's just, wow, it's very different. And I would just say, stay true to you. Like, what do you want to do? Like, do you want to write, direct? Do you want to edit? What stories matter to you? You know, like, if you make something, like, feel strongly about it. Like, fight for it. Like, I think, for me, I always think, okay, like, if I watch this film 10 years from now, will I really love it still. And so I ask that question, and a lot of projects that I make and I look at them years later, I'm like, wow, like I really felt the passion. You know, I still feel that passion for that story, and it's coming through. So I think creatives right now, it's really about like, what do you feel passionate about? What is something that, you know, is not just about you, but that's going to impact people. I think that we need that in today's world. There's a lot of things that are coming out that, you know, that are only like filler, you know, they're not hitting the heart. They're not about passion. And I think we need more passionate people to make projects that they care about. And that when you get in a Q&A, you can really speak to the love or the why you wanted to make that film, you know? And that's what I would say. I think things are changing so much, but human passion and love and emotion, you know, that is what remains. So I would say to just keep that inside.
Yeah, love that. Megan?
Let's see. Well, number one, I think people should really look at their finances and then look at their mental health. Because mm-hmm. I've been speaking to so many Black women that have my amount of talent or more. Some of them haven't worked in 3 years and they're just like tears. You know, I have tons of friends that have already left. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I was on my way to leave just to stay mentally strong. Right. Like I was like, I got to go with my family. I just got to make some money so that I know I'm like, where's somebody go back to LA? Because for me, this is activism. Like, yes, I will take a job for money because money is important so that I can do, you know, things, but other things that I really care about. Mm-hmm. But taking care of your mental health is very key, because in times like this, not just in the business, but in our country, they want to attack that mental health and make you not want to be passionate. Right. Mm-hmm. But I know Nigella will talk about, and you mentioned in her bio, her upcoming feature. She can call me and be like, Megan, you ready to line produce this movie? I'd be like, yes, girl, my knees are good. I'm ready to come back. You know what I mean? To, you know, to support her and April on that journey. Like I want to keep myself healthy. I also have been fortunate enough to get a job with the Film Commission, the California Film Commission, and I am learning who is funding all of these movies, right? Mm-hmm. So I have this huge Rolodex of all of these independent movies going on, and hopefully I'm able to pass that information on at the mixers, at the board, you know, say, hey, are you looking for... what sort of movies do these people want to tell? I have been meeting with tech people who want to give to the arts, but they really don't really understand the model, because tech mm-hmm. investments give back in a different way than film does. And mm-hmm. so that is one space that I'm getting into, which will be more of a creative sort of producer role. But I'm trying to do that. You mentioned my bio. I also started directing, learning how to direct. I'm going to be taking another course in December just so that I can diversify my talents so that I can still tell stories if I want to. And I think being a non-writing EP would be a really, really awesome thing to do. So that is what I am doing. And also staying in a community with as many people in my own circle who's going through it, so that we can empower each other when it's hard, because it is hard on so many different levels. But the stories and the passion, like what Water Angel did, us going through it, it was wild. Mm. But now when I think back, especially because I waited to watch it. I didn't watch it through all the different stages. I waited. And then when I watched it, and then I'm going to be talking to one of my cousins this Thanksgiving who actually lost her child. Mm. And now she has a child, and she also had a water birth So I'm so excited to be able to talk to her in person about how Water Angel impacted her, you know? So all those things like try to keep me going. And I always try to balance it. Like, do I need to downsize? Do I not need to, you know, dye my hair anymore, get my nails done so that I can have more money in the, you know, in the time, because this is, I'm living cheaper than I did when I was a PA. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it is that day, but I still love film. I still love TV. And I believe the social impact, especially with all of these rollbacks that are happening in every single arena, is worth it. You know, so.
I thank you for really sharing that, Megan, and being so honest and open about that, because I think, and I don't speak for all creatives, but I have noticed there's a stigma attached to like talking about like the present economic situation and how that affects everybody, because a lot of us don't have trust funds or safety nets, and the ones that do, I applaud them, and I'm like, hey, hire me. Hire me. But no, I'm saying realistically, that's true, because we've never seen this level of crises economically hit creatives in the Los Angeles area. And it is something that I welcome, and I see no shame and no stigma in talking about that, because you need to feel seen and heard. And also, that's what community is about. Like, you know, there is disruption in all fields. Like, even with technology, there was mass layoffs when we got onto internet, and then restructuring of different corporations. And as long as America goes through this in innovation and manufacturing and distribution, and that's now affecting us in the entertainment industry. So while we ride this like crazy storm, it is important, like you said, to be real, to be honest, to be vulnerable, and to connect with fellow creatives and let them know, you know what, this is how we can support each other. And yeah, it is a tough time. I say it all the time. And, you know, some of us have situations where, you know, our challenges may look different to others, but everyone is dealing with something, and we just may not know about it. So when we share our struggles, I think it makes people feel safer and seen and more like, oh, I'm not the only one. And that's the beautiful part about community, not just in film messaging, such as Water Angel. Like, I'm sure the discussions that come across when someone's like, oh, I lost a baby, or I can't be a mother, or this happened to me. Those are stories that are coming out of community just like that. Like, we're talking about this right now. Like, I'm being very mindful and intentional with my spending, because it's not a great time. And I still want to be in a space where I can, I've adopted pivoting, and I see nothing wrong with pivoting and adding on other venues of income, because that's what adults do. You know, that's what you do. That's what you do. But does that mean that it makes me less of an effective producer or creative? Absolutely not. I love it. But that's not taking care of me 100% right now.
Right.
And that's okay. That's okay. That's the thing. Like, it's totally okay if you have to take on another gig because you're an adult and you're a responsible human being. And that's where you stack your priorities, right? Like, because times are tough. And I really appreciate you being so open and vulnerable about that, because on sidebar comments and sidelines, I hear it from fellow creatives and colleagues. Like, oh, thank you for mentioning that, Farida. I'm struggling right now. Like, I really can't go out as much. I'm like, it's all good. It's all good. Like, this is a time that we're all dealing with this, and no one really knows how it's going to end up. And for those who are lucky to get a first look deal with the streamer, and good for them. And maybe they hear this and they're like, okay, how can we bring in more people from our film community into the mix? Maybe.
Yeah, it's such a tough time. Like, and just the point, just mental and emotional health, preserving that is so important. I used to be someone who, like, I was all about filmmaking 100%. Like, that's all I did. Stayed up till 3 a.m. every day writing my script. Like, that's all I lived. And it gets to a point where it's just like, you need other enjoyment. You need other avenues of pleasure and spirituality in your life to push through. I'm 40 now, so I've had a real tough time kind of adjusting to being older and needing other kind of sources of preservation to live. Because like, I can't just be focused on that 100% of the time. We need other ways to feel good. And I think it's normal. That's just being a human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, ladies, our final question is a reflective question before we say our farewells. What helps you stay grounded during these times when the world is feels so fractured? So
for me, it's my family. A lot of the things I do for my family because the family before me did it, right? So when things feel fractured or like, I always think my grandmother Carrie, who was a sharecropper, she picked cotton. When she moved to Ohio, she still would grow the cotton because she didn't always have to go pick it. So she loved to look at it when she didn't have to do it. I don't have to do that today, even though it's difficult for me financially. I don't have to do that. I also was able to go to college. I also was able to live a life without children. She would have been like, girl, enjoy yourself. So I really try to live for her. I also have outlived two of my father's siblings. So I use that family energy to do that. And then impact for me is anything that touches that vulnerable part of being a human, something that makes me feel present, in the moment. And when you feel that impact, whatever project it is, that for me is like, I don't know, I'm here in the art. You know, it's kind of like sometimes when you get like those goosebumps when you're at a concert, you hear somebody's voice. That is when impact is done. There's also impact of like, hey, they're going to install this program because they saw, they were moved so much. They're like, hey, we got to change the way we're doing this, or, you know, those types of impact. But I think it starts with how it changes everybody in their humanness.
Thank you. I love that. Nigella?
When I think back to like my inner child and just being a young girl wanting to be seen, you know, I read a lot of books where I was just wanting to see myself reflected. And to be where I am now is just an answer to that, you know, to my inner child just wanting to see worlds where I could exist in all of my humanity. And that's how I know that I've really accomplished something. But also in the work that I do in exploring the humanity of Black girls. And when I've had screenings and when I've been able to work with youth, I used to be an after school teacher, just seeing their eyes light up and seeing just that moment where they're like, wow, like, that's someone I know. It may not be me on the screen, but like it's someone that like I would hang out with. Like they're emotional from an image that I created. They're asking questions. Someone emailed me after watching Water Angels saying, you know, watching that film like changed their life as a young filmmaker, a Black woman. So those moments where I feel like the imagery and the story have really made a connection with the people that it's supposed to serve, I feel like that is the impact that I want to have. Someone felt seen, someone felt an emotion, someone felt like they want to question something, like they felt empathy for a person that they never thought they would have empathy for. That is something that really makes me emotional and just really touches my heart.
Well, ladies, I really thank you for joining us. I think both Megan and Nigella, you guys, this was such a fun and deeper illuminating conversation. I think it will inspire and educate a lot of our audience, not just on the Black maternal health crisis, but also on the creative collaboration you two ladies had. And you really offered a lot of insightful information for us to kind of navigate this weird time. I will link all your films and social media in our episode guide, but thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
All right, lovely divers. I'm Farida. You are listening to the Slow Dive podcast. Till next time, remember to listen, reflect, and connect.
Thanks for listening to the Slow Dive. Please be sure to subscribe and give us a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. The Slow Dive is hosted by Farida Rafiq and edited by Drew Franzblau. Our theme music is Dive by Cero.